Welcome back to today's episode of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm your host, Doug Kameen, and today I'm talking with Scott Geschel, CIO at Premier Outdoor Living. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate it. Nice to be here.
Yeah. So we were talking a little bit before the show. You and I are not actually geographically very far from each other. So you're just down in central Pennsylvania.
Correct. I'm just south of Allentown. My office is in the Pocono Mountains in Tamaqua, Pennsylvania, and then we also have an office in Hazleton, Pennsylvania, as well as Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Oh, that's a pretty big spread. So periodically, do you get out to Green Bay for work?
I've been out there one time.
Oh, one time. Oh, man. So what you really need to do is parlay this into some tickets for the Packers game, right?
Yes. And be a cheesehead for a couple of days.
That's right. Now, are you normally, I don't know if you're a football fan, I'm not a huge football follower myself, but of course I know that, you know, it's everywhere, so you know a lot about it. But
Right. I'm typically not a professional sports follower, football follower. I mean, you got to go with the Eagles just because they're close, but I understand the passion that people have with, you know, with football, and, you know, and Green Bay is probably one of the better places to see a game.
It feels like it, of course, this is going to be a great little side segue here, because this is like two non-sports dudes talking about sports stuff for a second.
Correct. Go so sports.
All the sports balls. We're going to talk all about it for a minute. But to your point, I think you make a great point, which I would certainly support. It feels like that some of the best teams or the best experiences are the small market teams, you know, that experience in Green Bay. You know, I live in the Binghamton, New York area. That's why, you know, we're geographically close. We're only probably about 90 minutes apart. And, but, you know, upstate here, like Buffalo is, you know, the experience of attending a Buffalo Bills game is apparently quite the scene to behold and quite the experience to have and be in that field and take part in it and stuff. So.
Right. And from what I understand, it's the same in Philadelphia for the Eagles, as well as in Green Bay for the Packers. And again, the stadium is just the way it's situated. The town kind of revolves around it. It's extremely commercial. Pick a place you want to eat and they have it there. It is just very, very commercial.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But no table jumping, right?
Correct.
We'll refrain from jumping off table. Or jumping off.
Yes, exactly.
On this podcast. So getting back to more serious conversations here. So we've got you here on our podcast to talk about leadership stuff. So you're the CIO at Premier Outdoor Living. You got multiple sites. What can you tell us? I guess, first of all, what does Premier Outdoor Living do?
So we are a conglomerate of, we have two businesses, three business units. So the first business under Highwood USA, we extrude plastic lumber, and then we make furniture under the brand Highwood USA. Mm. And then Highwood USA also has a spa skirting manufacturing where we work with different OEM hot tub manufacturers and provide them the panels that go around the hot tubs to hide plumbing and the motors and all of that. And then our third business is out, it's called Recycled Plastics Industries. It's out in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and they are a plastic extruder for many other types of industries, everything from, you know, manufacturing, agriculture, transportation, other furniture companies, et cetera.
Mm. So I'm feeling back like, so you're in the plastics business. It's fun.
Definitely the plastics business. Correct.
So this is like, what was that movie in the 70s, like The Graduate or whatever, Dustin Hoffman? They're like, what's the future, man? Like, what should I do? Plastics
for the future. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So that's the path you followed. You're in the plastics.
Correct. Correct.
So, and how long have you been CIO here?
So for 2 years, I've been here for 2 years, and again, loving every minute of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like a super cool business. So tell us a little bit about your journey to get to the CIO, you know, the CIO job. And right. This is, you know, this is funny. I normally have somebody's, LinkedIn profile to give me a cheat sheet, and I don't have yours open in enough time to burn.
Sorry.
I'm burning time here to see if I can get it, but I can't get it fast enough. I can't remember. This is your first CIO job, but how did you get to be in the CIO in the leadership role? Like, what was your journey?
So my journey really started back in when I was with QVC back in the early 2000s. I started there as an IT procurement manager, kind of led my way up through different roles to a senior manager role. And then, you know, as many people have experienced over the course of their career, their positions were eliminated. And I was, I left there and then took a position with Versu Materials. That was they're a process manufacturer for chemicals for the semiconductor industry. Mm-hmm. Very high tech. It's one of those things that going from online retail and having T-commerce at QVC going into that process manufacturing, very visual at QVC to I can't see it. I can't see what we're making because if I saw it, means I'm inhaling it, means I'm dead. So very, very bad, very, very bad chemicals. Uh-huh. So that was a big transition. And my boss there was an operations manager, and he essentially kept in contact with me, and Premier Outdoor Living was looking for someone to move into a full-time CIO role. They had a fractional CIO that previously to me, and they really wanted Mike to come on, who was my boss previously. And he's like, I can't where I am now. I'm happy, but I have this person, and they recommended me.
Got a guy.
Yep. We have a guy. So it definitely, don't burn bridges, and, keep your contacts and your network alive and healthy. That's definitely worked for me over the years.
Mm-hmm. And so as the CIO here now, and this is, it's funny now in the time you've been talking, I made sure to get your profile up so I can just follow you.
You're trying to give you enough time.
Yeah. Thanks. I appreciate that. So this is, we just acknowledge our failures here on the podcast when we talk. So as a CIO here, in your past roles, you've been, managers of, IT service manager and other stuff like that. But this is your first, I think by title, CIO, it sounds like, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask, there'll be a couple questions that will come from this. But my first is, have you experienced the role differently being titled a CIO versus being the IT services manager or some other kind of leadership IT role, but not necessarily titled as a C-level executive?
Yeah. I think that's a tough question. Titles to me really don't mean a whole lot.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is what you do and what you can achieve. Mm-hmm. If you're putting your best foot forward, I think it's building the right team. I had some objectives coming into this role where, the current leadership wanted to, build a high performing team. They wanted to have somebody who had some financial understanding, so that's my procurement background. They wanted someone who had the technical chops, but not be so technical that it would, baffle people. That's because I don't look at myself as a technologist. I look at myself as, as more of a business centric, always focused on where the business is going, what we can do to better improve the business, make it more efficient. And, oftentimes that ends with technology, rather than starting. I'm a very big people, process, technology person, and sometimes it's in that order. Uh-huh. So I do think that is one of those, one of those strong areas that I'm very process oriented. Being, an IT service manager, really brought me into the process understanding of business processes. And quite honestly, business processes typically don't change business to business. Accounts, mm-hmm. accounts payable is the same. Accounts receivable is the same. It's when you start getting into the KPIs, those are, probably more important to the business and how the business measures themselves with technology. So mm-hmm. I'm merely an enabler. I enable the business to get to the data that they need.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So, whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime.
So, thinking back in your career, when was the point, and most people I talk to, they can ultimately put their finger on this kind of like this time or this instance or this particular role. You move from being the team member, you know, a part of that team, to being the leader of that team. And that doesn't mean you're not also a part of the team as the leader. But, you know, as you were working on your journey into leadership, what part, or was there a time where you were like, you know what, like you look around and you're like, oh my God, I'm now the leader here, if you will.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I could think back to, you know, I was in the military. I was Air Force for 4.5 years. And then I was in the Pennsylvania Air National Guard for my remainder time. Total was 23 years. Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably in the military where, you know, I was always one of those individuals that I was always very proud about what I did and who I worked with. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you have someone who's proud about what they do and they're excited for what they do, that that feeling can be very infectious. So mm-hmm. I had some really good leaders in the military that kind of brought that out of me. I'm very introverted. I'm not an extrovert by nature, mm-hmm. but I do think according to Myers-Briggs, I'm an INTJ, but I do switch back and forth a little bit based on the individuals that I'm leading, throughout my journey. It's really has changed and opened my eyes to, you know, having the responsibility and the collaboration with my team that kind of drives me and, you know, just makes me more energetic to do the right thing. You know, it's not just me saying we need to go here, there, and there, and everywhere, but it's not just what we're doing, but I want my team to express how to do it.
Yeah. So you mentioned your Air Force service. Thank you for your service, by the way. Anyway, a handful of times, I bet you probably a quarter of the people that I've talked to on this podcast have some, you know, connection or military service. It's not an uncommon path to get into different ways of leadership. What qualities do you think you uniquely picked up from your time that was leadership qualities from your military service?
I do think it's always about managing self, you know, and how you manage yourself can easily go to the next level to manage and lead others. And I know that there's a distinction between managing and leading. There is mm-hmm. definitely a distinction. I look at myself as more, you know, of a leader. Again, bringing the best out in people. You know, seeing things that, I mean, even in the military, I had people that had reported to me that they didn't know that this was the right career field for them. You know, mm-hmm. and I've tried to find, you know, are there other things that they could potentially do and move them into, you know, into other areas. You know, some have been, you know, down the path of being, you know, a insurance salesman and, you know, and kind of changed the direction for them and, you know, got other people into IT because of my connection with, you know, with a lot of IT people, you know, through the military as well as through, you know, my civilian career.
Hmm. And so, there was a personal friend of mine who served in the military. He was saying, I can't remember which friend it was offhand, but he was telling me in the military, there's always a lot of effort to teach I would call it like management or leadership, and I know there's a distinction between the two, but he's like even the most basic job, there's an opportunity to teach something. Like, for instance, if there's, you know, if your job is to go clean the floor,
right,
to put two people at it, one person's job is to clean, one person's job is to make sure that the job gets done and probably clean too. And oh my god, my little like thing did the thing where my Apple thing. So the people on the podcast can't see this, but we're on video talking to each other. At first, I just gave I did the number two, which looks like a peace sign, which like made balloons appear all over my screen. So apparently we're celebrating. But anyways, back to what I had mentioned. The, so even there, like he was like, there's even an opportunity to lead there. And that's one of the things that they try to instill in you is that there's, you know, we put two people there because one of you is in charge.
Right. Yeah. On the job training is super important. Even having one, I look at it as on the job training, you can morph one-on-ones with on the job training. So if you're doing direct training with an individual, and that to me is how one-on-ones have at least have become for me. It's time where, you know, the person who's reporting to me, you know, has my, you know, my attention for, you know, for the time of the one-on-one. They can ask any questions. And it's, I try to build that level of trust that mm-hmm. they feel free to, you know, to speak your mind. And I always ask them, is there anything that I can do? Is there anything that I can do, you know, for them? It's not just what they can do for me or for the organization.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that opens up a lot of conversations that go well beyond, you know, just the task at hand or, you know, the projects that they might be working on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like checking in with your staff to understand where they're at, like just not just like, hey, you need to get this done. Why isn't it done today? But like, let's understand what's going on here.
Right.
Yeah. Sometimes I work in the mental and behavioral health space is the business I'm in. And we get, the phrase du jour is called, you know, bringing your whole self, if you will, knowing. So we specifically work in an area, or we're specialists or experts in an area called trauma informed and trauma responsive care, which is the idea that everybody shows up with baggage that you can't see. And I say baggage in the very loosest terms, because I'm sure if, so, you know, one of the people who's an expert in this be like, don't use the term baggage. But but everybody has traumas, or everybody has challenges that you may not see in that moment. You know, so when they show up to work, and they're frustrated that day, you may not understand that, you know, this thing happened the other day to them, you know, a year ago, something made them, that makes them very anxious about what's happening today and stuff like that. And that doesn't mean you can't hold them accountable. It doesn't mean you shouldn't hold them accountable for their work or anything else like that. But having that more holistic understanding can help you be a better manager and leader, but also also help that individual be a better performer in their roles.
Right. Right. It's all about empathy, right? Mm-hmm. It's understanding, you know, where they're coming from. You know, did they have something happen in their last night at home, you know, mm-hmm. and they bring that to work, and you can see that right away. If you mm-hmm. don't know the team that well, I think that's where remote work has suffered a little bit, because it's all about getting things done. You can't just tap somebody on the shoulder and say, hey, you doing okay today? You know, it's taking forth that extra effort to ensure that you have their back.
I
think that's like, super important.
Yeah. So I think about intentionality. So you have to be, you know, especially when you're doing with remote work, you have to be more intentional about your connection points. Right. And you have to come curious, with how you approach people, you know, so curious about like, okay, tell me more about why this is, and not just, I'm going to assume that because you didn't do it right now, or this thing didn't happen that I expected, that it's for whatever the assumption may be, you come in curious to find out. So help me understand first. I'll pass my judgment still at some point here, because I'm the manager, I'm the leader, and I have to ultimately be responsible and accountable to making sure we get stuff done. But we can start with not making assumptions, bad assumptions, to get the thing started.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So just changing gears here a little bit. One of the things we we try to ask on our podcast is we, obviously without asking you to be too revealing about things that might be, I would call it confidential or proprietary types of data, but like, what are some of the tools and things that your company or you as a professional are thinking about or super interested in? Like, is there a new product you're working on that's like really exciting for you or anything else like that, that, you know, like you found like this is going to change things, or this is a real thing I always bring to every job that I do, this product or this tool or something like that?
Right. I would be remiss if I wouldn't say AI is a target, but it's, to me, it's the holy grail of where we need to get to. And we are very infant in that journey. We are still working through our governance, coming up with data owners, ownership, making sure that data is cleansed, it's clean. You know, we've all heard the adage of garbage in, garbage out.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get us to a point where the business can rely more on the data. And that's understanding the processes that the operators are taking as they're making that material, all the way through to ensuring that, you know, that a bill of materials lines up with a GL code on the finance side. So all of those things are super important. And until that data is really cleansed and we have a good grasp on where those data lives, then we can start looking at outside influential data, like market data. We can look at, you know, like bring in Google Analytics and things of that sort to start driving more or better decisions and start looking more to be more predictive where the market is going from our furniture side, what our customers are going to be looking for next year, you know, so we can be a little bit more, you know, a little bit more, not crystal ballish, but at least a little bit more, again, prescriptive on where we're going to go and be more predictive.
So do you guys have a favorite AI tool that you're looking at right now, one that you prefer to work with, or are you kind of feeling out the map? And before you answer that, I'll share on my side.
Yep.
We've also been looking at, you know, how does AI intersect with our work, which can be somewhat interesting in that we don't, you know, we don't make widgets and sell things. We do services and help people. So there's the answers about where the tool become useful can be different. So I created a learning collaborative. So a collaborative learning project. We have a couple of cohorts of staff who are of different experience levels and different areas of the business. Get them together periodically. They share their findings to help learn from one another about where the tools are. Now, we're focused on Microsoft Copilot because that way you can keep the data within your tenant easily, you know, as opposed to having like a, you know, like a ChatGPT or something where there's a risk that some of what you could, if you put in proprietary data, could escape to the into the model. So like I've got a couple of staff that are really like superstars at this. I've got a gentleman on the finance side who's like, yeah, so I created like this randomization routine using the AI tools that'll, you know, you feed it like protected health information data in a spreadsheet that we need to analyze for some sort of like contract that we're working on to give data analysis on like health outcomes and stuff.
Right, right.
It'll build all this stuff. It'll create the randomized numbers for you. Then there's like a decoder key that it generates to undo it if you need to. He's using it to sort through fairly large data sets to find patterns and things like that. So like we're finding those uses. And then Copilot itself, we found a lot of use in more specifically in like Copilot. Copilot's a little more set up like a coach. I don't know how much you've experimented with it. I gave you a chance to talk to, but when we're finding that it has very specific uses where Microsoft has pushed it into the various applications that you use. So I'll let you talk.
Last year, I had a webinar with Abacus AI. They made a chat bot that inserts into Teams and allows you to do, you know, searches within Teams. Mm. And this was before Copilot, came out. That is one of the areas that I want to make sure that whatever we do doesn't become publicly, you know, public knowledge. You know, I don't want to build, you know, a model that starts bringing in, you know, the internet data, because that's not going to, really provide a whole lot of value for us or expose our data out to the internet. So keeping that close. One of the other things that I was looking at is integration, like an integration hub, you know, to bring that data in and to localize it so that, you know, we can build those data models against that particular, against that integration hub. And it'll help us from an operational and operability perspective, make us a little bit more effective on how we're automating. I mean, AI's been used for years in the cybersecurity space and, you know, monitoring and learning different vectors and things of that sort within the cybersecurity monitoring space the detection and response space. So it's definitely out there, and you know how you use it is really where the business is going to kind of dictate what the appetite of leveraging AI data versus human data. Mm-hmm. It's all the same. It's just how we're aggregating it.
Yeah, one of the things we found when we turned on Copilot for that group of testing users was you mentioned about Teams, and Copilot can be used to search Teams. So Teams, most organizations have some sort of sprawl. You have the sprawly, uncontrolled, unmanaged Teams environment, because the way it rolls out from Microsoft's perspective was, hey, we just turn it on and look, you could do it yourself. So then the self-service nature leads to a lot of like unmanaged setups. I have a plan to get ours back under control over time and put some barriers on who can create Teams. But in the interim, we've found that once Copilot is enabled, the previous search, if you will, of Teams was relatively simple. So it might search an individual team and I was like that, but Copilot, because it's aware of your whole tenant, all of a sudden, teams that you theoretically have access to, but don't explicitly, you aren't explicitly added to, like Copilot is aware that you have access to them now.
Right.
So it's like, you want to see this document? And you're like, wait a minute, what is this? And you're like, oh my gosh, like this is the finance team. Yeah. So like we have to go back to like our finance team and be like, hey, you guys, I don't know if you know about that team you set up, but you know, when you just set it up to be generally available and you only added your team to it because you set it up for a general availability, technically it's visible.
Right. Right.
You know, in the tenant.
Yes. Yeah. And I said in rights, you know, that's where, you know, access and, you know, and, you know, user rights, I think are play an even more important part because now you're exposing, you know, all the various users within the company to see everything. And with file shares, you didn't have that because they were given access to specific file shares. Yeah. Now we have Teams. Yes, they have access to certain teams, but different large language, you know, LLMs can see a lot more than, you know, just what they're supposed to see.
Absolutely. So I'm going to shift gears again here. Talk call it humorous or fun side of our conversations. I wanted to ask if you could share. So I always there's always a couple of topics I'll ask different guests on. So, you know, just depending on how the conversation goes. I feel like I would love to know, and for our listeners, if there is, can you tell us something that we wouldn't expect about you? You know, and like, you know, a non-tech thing, you know, so like, for instance, I build things. I built during COVID and lockdown. I bought a vintage Airstream and I ripped it apart and I rebuilt the whole thing, including all the cabinetry and everything else. Sure. So like, I'm unusually handy, I guess is the way to put it.
Yes. Yeah. I'm also unusually handy. I do have, I have a woodworking shop, you know, in my pole barn. Uh-huh. But one of those things I think that most people don't know about me is that I also farm. My wife's family have a 105 acre farm. We actually subdivided 2 acres off of it and built our house on that farm. So it's like literally right there. And you know, my father-in-law is no longer able to farm. So my wife and I and my 17-year-old son have kind of taken that load on. We don't have animals. We're mostly, you know, simple hay, you know, hay farm. Mm-hmm. But my wife and I are going to start doing flowers, grow flowers. Cool. You know, so that's again looking at you know, the future outside of, you know, outside of technology. And I'm sure that there are days, I know even very, very successful CIOs, successful people go, you know, a day or two without feeling like they accomplished anything and, you know, plowing a field or, you know, or making, you know, making 200 hay bales, you can turn around at the end of the day and say, I did that. It's, mm-hmm. it's that immediate gratification. That's why I like doing it. And I'm sure it's the same, you know, with you as you, you know, built the cabin tree and, you know, you put all that effort into it. You have something to show for it at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, it's nice to have something that's rewarding aside from the work that I do, because I do find that rewarding too. But, you know, just something different. Like today, I was in the office. I mean, I'm here in my office in Rochester, which I'm not in every day. So I live a couple hours away from the office. And we have this big training room and a couple of other conference rooms. And I get I look and each one has like sets of chairs and tables that belong in them. And then they got all mixed up, you know, because like if nobody's here to do it. And I'm just like, so I had like a half hour break between two meetings today. I'm just like wheeling chairs back and forth between the two, putting them all back the way
sorting
they should
them all
be.
Out.
Yep. And I could already hear somebody be like, dude, what are you doing with that? Like, why that is like essentially like you shouldn't be doing that at, you know, you're the CIO, have somebody from like facilities take care of that. But I'm like, But when it's done, it's like I got to accomplish it and it wasn't hard for me to do. It's kind of nice to just have something on your task list that just felt like, you know what? I just set out to do something. It took me like 15 minutes and it wasn't complicated, but I still did it myself. Right.
Yeah. I do that all the time. You know, I see, you know, I walk by a copier and if I'm going from, you know, meeting to meeting, you know, you walk by a copier and you see, you know, papers out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll just go ahead and I'll just fill not just the one tray, but I'll fill them all, make sure that we're good. And then, you know, and continue on, you know, my journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's just those little things. It's those little things that, you know, I know it would make, if I was, you know, starting out my career, it would make me feel good knowing that, you know, a C-level person is, you know, willing to help out and, you know, lean in whenever needed or not when needed too.
Yeah, for sure. So, another big, I this is actually my favorite non-tech or non, you know, IT related question for our guests. So Star Trek or Star Wars?
Oh, I would have to say Star Wars.
Oh man. God, you got me the woodworking and now you're doing Star Wars.
Yeah.
I'm a Star Trek guy. You might have discerned that very quickly, but there's nothing wrong with Star Wars. I just make sure to say that so we don't get flamed on the podcast.
Yeah. I understand. Yep.
So what draws you to Star Wars and what makes it like what inspires you about Star Wars, I guess?
I would say my brother-in-law is probably I have two people in my life that have been very, very strong Star Wars people. I don't know a whole lot of Trekkies. And my brother-in-law collected all kinds of Star Wars things. And I have a friend that he was on my team when I worked at QVC, who has read every single Star Wars book. He, you know, he'll go to the movies and watch, you know, the full, you know, all however many movies there are in one fell swoop. Uh-huh. You know, so that's kind of why I lead to Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like Star Trek New Generation. I do like do like the new generation.
Yeah. I've managed to pass on the Star Trek bug to I think both of my sons, but particularly my older son. So he and I sit and work through the episode. There's the seasons, all stuff. We did the new stuff like Star Trek Discovery and Stranger Worlds and those. And then we went back through Star Trek Enterprise, which I found on rewatching. I found it much better. I didn't dislike it the first time around, but I was like, this actually was really good. Like it held up really well. And then we went through Next Generation. We went to Deep Space Nine, which my personal favorite. I'm all Deep Space Nine. That is my jam. We're currently working through old Star Trek, like original series, which is kind of great. Like it's he recognizes that the storytelling is the important part of it,
right?
And not the special effects. You know, like you look at it, like the Green Gorn lizard, and it's clearly like a rubber suit on some dude.
Right. Well, it's like they say, what's retro is coming, you know, what was retro is now new.
Absolutely.
So,
all right, we're coming up on the end of the podcast here. And I always make sure my final thing to ask our guests is, if you were sharing with somebody who's coming up in their leadership journey, what would you want to share to them?
I think someone new coming into IT is at a really exciting time in their career, because they can choose which areas to go into. When I started, it was, you were all IT. It was, you did everything. And then it started getting into more specialties. When I was young, candy computers in the library. My first computer was a Commodore PET 64. Mm-hmm. My mom sent my sister and I to summer school to do coding. And
I did that too with the TI-99/4A's. That was logo with the turtle.
Yes. I hated it. I hated every minute that I was there, because it was, you spend hours upon hours typing in your code just to see, a caterpillar go this, go zigzag across the screen. It's like,
yeah,
really? That's all I did. So coding was never my gig. I've always been very much device centric. I've always been a computer guy. So infrastructure has fit me really well. And then I started getting into more of the services behind it. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend anybody who doesn't know what they want to do is to sit on a service desk, mm-hmm. Sit on a help desk, and just listen to the calls that come in, because that's going to definitely help you kind of move into the right area that is best suited for you, whether it's hardware, whether it's software, whether it's applications, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's data, if you want to be a data scientist, So I do think that to me is categorization. Try to have that individual categorize where do they see themselves going. And I've heard from other podcasters that have been, on the show, have said, that they were, had a completely different career path and then got into IT. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of different areas today that they can specialize in.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. All right. Scott, thank you so much for investing your time with us on the podcast today.
Absolutely. This was great. This was fun.
So that's a wrap on today's episode of Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I'm Doug Kameen, and we look forward to coming to you on our next episode.